What's up, everybody? Welcome back to episode 43 of Positivity Spartans. It's your boy, the legendary Hub, back again with my co-host with the most, Eric Lane, and Marcellus Majestic James. What's up, fellas?
What's up?
What it do, brother?
You know, it's another beautiful day. And we're also joined today by two special guests. We have Miss Amber Green.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing today?
I'm doing well.
Love to hear. We have Mr. Aaron Cook. What's going on, my brother? How y'all doing today?
What's good, man? I'm good, man. I'm living.
Love to hear it. Aaron was born in Baltimore, but in his words, grew up in the whitest place on earth. Graduated from UMass in 2015 with a degree in history. Some of his childhood role models include Malcolm X and Tupac. Love to hear it. Father of three and a husband. Love to hear it. Currently teaching high school geometry. Okay, love. You know what I mean? So you in the trenches, huh?
Yeah, for sure, man. These kids don't know math, but they say they like, man.
You give them a couple dollars, they'll be able to count that, though, huh?
Yeah, for sure. That's what matters, though.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. Here we have Miss Amber Green. She's born in D.C., lives on the Eastern Shore. And go-go is life, I hear you. Hey, my boy put me on some go-go. I ain't gonna lie, that is some good music.
You already know, bro.
Yeah, that is some good music. Also attended UMass, studied English literature. Currently the executive director and founder of Phoenix Youth Project. Love to hear it. A creative arts organization rooted in social justice and services homeless youth and young adults. The organization was inspired by her love for the Harlem Renaissance and writers of the time such as Langston Hughes and Zora Neale Hurston, activist and a mother of four. So your son's name is Legend.
Yes, he is.
I love it. I love it. I was reading that earlier and I was like, yes, that's the energy I love to have here.
Yes.
Amber, what's the quote I said yesterday when we mentioned Legend? I can't remember.
Say it again.
I can't remember the quote I told Amber yesterday when she mentioned her son's name was Legend. I can't remember.
I can't remember neither. And I'm scared to like get off. It might kick me off.
Man, we got a special quote today, and I'm actually gonna let Aaron bring up the quote because I forgot it once again, my man. I tried to remember.
It's all good. So this quote's from Stokely Carmichael, aka Kwame Ture. If you don't want no problems, keep your filthy white hands off our beautiful black skin.
Yes, sir. You heard it there first. Stokely Carmichael. A lot of people may not know about Stokely Carmichael, man, a.k.a. Kwame Ture.
How can you not know about Stokely?
Man, I'm trying to tell you. You know what? Our school systems. Before we get into that, in case you haven't noticed, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking a little black history. You know, it's February. But as we were saying, you know, it's the school systems. You know, they don't always teach that. I'm going to be honest with my standpoint. Growing up, it was like every year we learned about Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and, you know, Rosa Parks, and that was about it.
Yeah, that's pretty much.
Right. So it's the same for your areas as well?
I mean, when I lived in D.C., Black history was, like, celebrated throughout the entire year. Like, when we did the Pledge of Allegiance, we also sung Lift Every Voice. So Black history was our history.
Yeah, that's dope.
But when I moved
out to...
Where'd you go to school in D.C.? Hmm? Where'd you go to school in D.C.?
I went to Orr Elementary School. I went to a bunch of private schools, but it was Chocolate City when I was in D.C. And then my parents, you know, moved me out to Southern Maryland, West Bubble, the other side of I don't know where. And that's when everything changed. It was like a huge culture shock. So that's when everything changed. I didn't learn anything except about Dr. Mudd and all that stuff, which I didn't care about.
Yeah, it's crazy. What about you, Aaron? How was it in your school district growing up?
It was terrible, man. So, I was actually blessed, though, man. My third through fifth grade teacher was an alpha, and he was dope. Mm. So our Black history was pretty lit. We even learned about Greek fraternities and sororities in class in third grade. Granted, at that point, it kind of went right over my head. You know what I mean?
Right.
But after that, it was pretty much dry. But we did have, I did have a lot of support in that aspect, because like my junior high assistant principal was Black, and she did like this after school thing she called Black Saga, and our job was to continue to research Black figures, and that actually was cool. But my parents are very like, as conservative as they are, they were very like Black Black Power when I was growing up.
Right.
Now they, you know, they chilled out a lot now, but, you know, that was my upbringing.
No, that's crazy, man. We talk about on the podcast a lot how much representation matters. That's dope to hear that you had a black principal.
Yeah, yeah. That was definitely different. It was definitely different because, I mean, even so, like, in my high school, I probably graduated with, like, 15 black people. No lie, out of 1,800 students.
Damn.
So, yeah, we were definitely sparse in there.
We had my school district growing up, Lebanon School District, we had one black teacher, Mr. Mason, and he taught 15.
Yep.
Wow.
Only black. Wow. And we had a black sub in the high school.
Yeah. Yep, and that's probably about it. And I never had Mr. Mason. So, like, I've actually never had an actual black teacher.
I mean, that experience just mirrors, like, so many young people's experience, like, now and today. Like, I'm working with the city of Salisbury doing this Black History Month project with Wacomico County Schools students. And we're basically uncovering black history. And there's a student that goes to Salisbury Middle School, and she had no idea that Salisbury Middle School used to be Salisbury High School, which was the all-black high school on Salisbury. So, you know, it really just means that we have to, in the community, like, just really just teach our own history. We can't even depend on the schools to tell us about themselves.
Right. That's very true. Now, you said Langston Hughes is one of your inspirations, childhood inspirations.
Yep.
Speak a little bit on that for me, please.
Well, it's a little bit of Langston Hughes, Zora Neale Hurston, anyone that came out of that Harlem Renaissance time period. Because for me, I'm a poet, a spoken word artist, and I use a lot of my art to really just talk about the stuff that I'm seeing in the community, stuff that I'm feeling. I'm very transparent. I'm transparent about mental health and everything. And one of the things that I just really love about Langston Hughes is that, you know, one of the secrets about him was that, like, he was like a homosexual, and like he kept everything like behind closed doors. And then, you know, James Baldwin, who I think was probably just as great as a writer as him, if not better, was very open. And you see how those two poets from that time period was just treated differently. And so, I don't know, just Langston Hughes, Zora Neale Hurston, everybody, all the writers from that time period, they really just put their everything, and they really told history. I think I know history through art more than I know through history through school.
Yo, for real, because it's like I was speaking to somebody the other day about how there's not, back then there were so many leaders and so many people who had that charisma that you could just gather around. And I think that's the reason right there, where they incorporated their beliefs into their art. And I mean, it resonated a lot more with people.
Definitely. I mean, like, even with music and everything, like Sam Cooke, like, everybody.
Facts, yeah. Talk about music, it leads us right into Aaron and one of his early role models, Tupac.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, growing up, you know, you grew up in an area in which you see so much just sneaky racism, in a sense.
Right.
You know, I feel like
closeted racism.
Like black men have it a lot easier when it comes to racism than black women.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to start the whole entire, like, gender war thing, but the truth is this. I can go to an all-white school, and white boys gonna look at me like, oh, man, I kind of want to be friends with him, because when they see me, they see their favorite athletes.
Yep.
Right.
And whether they think about it or not, they see their favorite artists, whether they think about it or not. White women, up until recent, really never had black women they looked up to. You know what I mean? Like, you know, white girls, they listen to Beyonce on, like, you know, they'll turn her on. But, like, you'll never really, I've never seen a white beehive girl.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, black women in that aspect have it harder because white women traditionally don't have black women role models like white men do. Have they had black men role models? So, you know, black women have it harder. But, like, you know, so growing up, you know, I see that sneaky racism. Tupac was more so, like, you know, type of person to call how you see it, and even kind of hit you in his old music. Like, Tupacalypse Now was a jump into, like, systematic racism before talking about systematic racism was even a thing.
Right.
You know, he has his Words of Wisdom is, like, my favorite song on the album. He just goes in, he rips the whole entire, like, you know, curriculum about how we learn about Martin Luther King each week. You know what I mean? But we hide the words of Malcolm X and right. you know Black nationalism, stuff like
that. Kwame Ture.
It's dope. Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, exactly. Like the Langston Hughes. You know what I mean, it's like I had a music teacher who it's crazy that the music teacher is actually like bigger on Black history than a lot of us. And that's the only reason why I did learn about Langston Hughes, which is crazy.
Yeah, because I mean, and the great thing about Tupac was he was a poet, and like,
oh, in the truest sense.
And it was like, and more importantly, like he was a full blown artist in like the truest form, like because he did ballet, he went to an art school, he acted, like he made sure to put so much of his life into his work. It was just, he was just dope. So. Yeah, Tupac's dope.
Absolutely, yeah. I came from. I love Tupac. I always talk about that track with Kendrick Lamar in that interview, Mortal Man, man, because his words is just
Mortal Man.
His words is just crazy. In your own words, either of y'all can answer first. In your own words, what is Black history to you?
That's a tough one, man.
Yeah,
that's a tough one. I don't feel like Black history can really be I kind of stumbled the other day saying that Black history is the accomplishments of people with black skin. You know what I mean? It's showing how we got out of the mud.
Right.
And even before we were Black Americans, showing how we ruled the world. That's Black history.
Right.
You know, Black history is understanding that the modern civilization starts with the black man. Whether it's domestication of our human life, showing how much, you know, the Moors had to do with the way we even live life today. That's Black history. Black history is just everything, all the accomplishments, the culture. And I think a lot of people, you know, especially growing up in a white area, I've seen like white teachers and stuff stray away from pop culture being Black history.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like, you know, I'm not saying not to take away from anybody, any other black, you know, figures, but Black pop culture is a world phenomenon. That is
true. That is so true. That is so true.
And I think for me, when I think about Black history, I think about it on two different levels, because you have Black history and then you have American Black history.
Okay.
And then Black history in a sense of globalness, it's I don't even want to say it's overwhelming, but it's like everlasting. Like you're always going to find some type of historic moment that we as a people, like with melanin, as melanated people, what we have done, what we have achieved on so many different continents and so many different places in the world. And so I think about that as Black history. But when I think about American Black history, I think it's like it's happening every day. And it's almost like every day a Black person is living through history, because it seems like we are still going through stuff that we thought was history. Feel like I'm in, like, when I think about Black history and American Black history, I'm literally thinking about, like, this movie that has not stopped. Like, I'm constantly in this long documentary where it's just, like, when are we going to get to the achievement part? Like, when we actually achieve something. And with Black America, I just think, like, we are just, like, in this standstill. So history, I'm just, like, we're living it. So
For sure.
So I got a question. Last week in class, we had a discussion about Black History Month. How do you guys feel about Black History Month? Because in my opinion, I think Black history is somewhat American history.
The origin though?
Nah, I don't. Yeah, that's what I'm asking everyone's opinion on it. You know, how does everyone feel about separating us by having our separate history month?
I mean, I just feel like 28 days just ain't enough. And sometimes feel like when we limit the truth to just 28 days, it's like, you know, we're just trying to skim the notes real quick so we can pass the test. Like, oh yeah, I'm not racist.
To check
I
the
can
block.
Say my facts in this month. But I think, you know, in a way, it's bittersweet, because we don't have this time where we dedicate in educating our youth, our Black youth. And it sucks that we have to rely on a handout to educate our youth, but 28 days just ain't enough.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I would attribute Black history being like minimum wage. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Minimum wage is there because someone was exploiting the system so much that they were trying to get away with as much as they could get away with.
Right.
So Black history was more so like, oh, all right, y'all gonna jump over our history. Let's implement this in. So you have to do the bare minimum is observe this in the month of February. You know what I mean?
Right.
But the way I see it is this. I feel two ways about it. When I taught history in high school, I originally told myself I'm not going to do Black History Month because, you know, I felt like I was above that, you know? So I incorporated Black history throughout the whole entire year. But then when I got to February, I was like, all right, I'm already doing my due diligence, but the thing about it is, from the average student's perspective, they're not going to see, like, oh, Mr. Cork teaches Black history throughout the year. They're going to see it as, oh, Mr. Cork skipped over Black History Month during February, and I'm going to look like a Tom.
Right.
And that's one thing I wasn't going to do, you know what I mean? So I went extra hard. And I feel like the reason my biggest disdain for Black History Month is this. When I started teaching other history, like, you know, stuff that kids didn't know, when I used to ask them what time period we in, they always thought it was the 1960s, because that's all we talk about. We talk about the Civil Rights Movement, and they think that's Black history.
Right.
Like, no, that's just Black. That's like Black, you know, the Black Revolution. Right. You know, there's stuff before that, you know, and that's my biggest thing. I think we need it, because you got teachers who are doing the bare minimum. But I will say, this is my biggest thing. I was telling Eric this other day, I want to start a nonprofit that actually trains teachers how to properly teach Black history.
Okay.
Because we teach white supremacy underneath the guise of Black history. So let me explain that. So I was teleworking last week. So I'm listening to my wife's class because she teaches ELA students. So she sits into a lot of classes. So, you know, the whole entire lesson is about segregation, blah, blah, blah. And this is what I hear the teacher say. All right, so here's a picture of the KKK. Guys, it's not pretty. It's a part of history. We gotta address it so we can learn from it and move on. Next thing I hear is, all right, guys, here's a picture of a lynching. It's not pretty, but, you know, it's part of our history. We gotta move on. Now, I'm not saying the teacher's racist, but what I'm saying is that is not Black history lesson.
Right.
That is a lesson on white supremacy underneath the guise of Black history. So what happens is we get white kids who get in this classroom and feel uncomfortable when they come out, and that's why they hate Black history, because it's like, dang, my Black friend's going to be treating me dirty for like 2 days because they upset.
Right.
Rightfully so. Like, if I'm sitting through a lesson and I'm hearing about, like, your ancestors being trifling and being dirty for no reason, I ain't going to bang. I'm not going to want to bang with you for 3 days. You know what I mean? Because that's new to me. I'm hurt. You know what I mean? So if we start teaching...
Hey. I want to hear. I don't mean to cut you off. I kind of want to hear Amber's interjection.
I don't mean to interject, but it's like I sort of agree, but then I don't agree, because I feel like the teacher definitely failed in that aspect. Because you know, I was just having this conversation with some kids, and they were talking about their experiences, and one of the students was like, they feel as though teachers are just uncomfortable, and you can tell that they're uncomfortable when they're teaching. Like, these students know when a teacher is uncomfortable. And that just sounds like a teacher who wanted to just rush through a lesson because they didn't know how to teach this particular subject. Because I feel like you can teach about the lynchings, but then also talk about how, you know, this lynching is still happening in mass incarceration. Like, talk about how it evolved. Talk about how the domestic terrorism have, you know, still have, like, you know, things happening in the community. And I feel like that's where you can take these students further. But these teachers, what I'm seeing, especially in Wicomico County, is that they're scared to talk about the truth, because the truth is so in their face and it's happening right now that, you know, they don't want to lose their job, or they don't want to mess up, you know, their family's job. Like, it's so, like, this small town, like, people are so scared to speak out or speak about truth because they feel like it's going to affect their personal life. And I feel like, you know, that's where we have to be okay with being uncomfortable, because these kids want to talk about it. I mean, I have the group that I'm working with is white kids, Black kids, Spanish kids, and they're sitting here like, why don't we know this stuff?
Right. Yeah, I can definitely agree with both points. In my opinion, I think it comes to, in order to teach something, you have to understand it. You know what I mean?
A lot of them don't know.
And Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, how can you teach something you don't understand? And it goes, like, back into, like, you guys were saying, you know, they're uncomfortable or they're just checking the block because they don't necessarily understand it themselves because they were never taught it.
Exactly. So, I definitely think there needs to be some type of training. So, you know, I do have a nonprofit. If you need some help, I do, you know, offer that.
All right, say less.
That kind of, so... That makes me think about UMES. We had a white Black History teacher, and my personal opinion, I refused to take a class with her.
Captain
I'm
not going
to put
her name
out here, but I refused to take a class with her. Oh, okay, you can go ahead. So Dr. Wright, Aaron knows Dr. Wright, Marcellus and Isaiah know Dr. Wright as well. Man. So, you know, Dr. Wright always told me, he'd be like, man, if you don't take a class with that white lady, I'd be like, no, doc, I refuse to do it, man. Like, what can she tell me about my history that I already don't know? Or what can she enlighten me about Black history that, you know, someone else Black can't enlighten me on? So, I don't know, man. I got mixed feelings about it.
Well, listen, Dr. Catherine Barrett Gaines, listen, this woman, I actually took her history class, and I loved her. I loved her because... For me, that was my first time seeing a person in white skin really get, like, the premise of Black culture and teaching history and not teaching it through a lens, through a filter to make people feel comfortable. I know that when we did a documentary for The Sign, the Confederate marker that was in downtown Salisbury, and it was, like, this big controversy. We was trying to remove it. We actually had her... featured in a documentary. When I tell you she was dropping like gems and like, you know, information, it wasn't necessarily her educating us, because if you went to her class, you'll realize that it wasn't hardly a lot of Black kids taking her class. It was a lot of white students taking her class. And it was like, for me, it was like, I feel like white students need to hear the realness from another white teacher. I love being in her class. And then when, you know, seeing another student, you know, try to combat her, I just sit back and say, all right, how you about to take this? How you about to take this white woman? How you about to, you know, drop the facts so this student doesn't just, you know, bypass this lesson? I liked it because I feel like in this essence, this is where allyship come into, because some people only learn from... Sometimes they only learn from people who look like them.
Yeah, look like them. Yep.
Right. Absolutely. Representation. Right.
Yeah, I was going to say the allyship part, because, like, we all think of the civil rights movement and you see the Black figures that stood in line or whatever, but a lot of that stuff couldn't have been done without white allies. And people have to, you know, accept that. So,
truly, because a lot of people forget the Black Panthers definitely was working with, some country white boys who wore the Confederate flag on their jackets. They also work with the LGBT. LGBT, like, at the core of the Black Panthers, the core of what Huey P. Newton wanted for that organization was true unity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when, even when you talk about with Martin Luther King, nobody really cared about Martin Luther King when he was doing Selma and all this other stuff. He got shot when he was going to go down there and talk to low-income white people and low-income Black people. That's when they wanted him gone.
Because he was a threat at that point.
He was a threat at that point when he was getting ready to unite everyone. And so, and that's the part that they don't want to teach that. They want to say, oh, well, he was shot.
Why was he shot?
Why was he shot? Let's talk about what was he getting ready to do that day.
Yeah, let's talk about why he was still alive at the hospital.
So, quick fact for you guys.
You're preaching.
Black History kind of started from a guy named Carter G. Woodson. He established what was called Black History Week, and he felt that wasn't enough time. He established that week during the time that I believe Martin Luther King, Abe Lincoln, and one other historical figure, all their birthdays are in that same week, and then they wind up pushing it until it became a month in like 1980. They enacted it as a holiday. If you guys didn't know. For any of the listeners.
Right, yeah, I appreciate that, dropping that little gem, because I did not.
I didn't know that. I feel like everything that we have to celebrate our culture was, like, you know, thought up by some, you know, scholarly Black dude who was like, this isn't enough. Because mm-hmm. I was thinking about the organizer that started Juneteenth, because we do the Juneteenth Festival now in Salisbury. And just learning about the dude that started Juneteenth is actually from the Eastern Shore.
Wow.
And so it's really not Juneteenth, Kwanzaa. There we go. Kwanzaa.
Okay.
And so that was like a really big thing. So we do the Juneteenth celebration, but we also do a Kwanzaa celebration now with the city of Salisbury. And so we learned all that history, and we didn't even know that, you know, the originator of Kwanzaa is from the Eastern Shore.
I love how Juneteenth is becoming more popular.
Of course. Like, fuck your 4th of July.
Yeah, for sure.
I was not free.
I don't even like fireworks.
Nah, I like me some fireworks.
That's that PTSD talk.
I can't fool with fireworks, man. Me and my dog, we don't like fireworks.
Hey, Max is just like, hey,
that's
bro.
That's my guy right there, right here, man. For sure. Man,
Aaron, is he?
Go ahead.
Aaron, isn't your wedding anniversary on Juneteenth?
Yeah, so
that's lit.
We got married on Juneteenth purposely. Me and my wife, yeah. And then my wife, when we were first boyfriend and girlfriend, that's when I asked her out, I was on Juneteenth.
Yeah.
So going forward, I knew that's the day I wanted to be, you know, something we celebrated in my household forever. So, you know.
That's dope, man.
That's been a special day for me for a while.
Yeah, that's lit. To see you married.
Sure love story.
I wanted to ask y'all, I mean, since we're running short on time, just go ahead, drop your IG so the people know where to find y'all. And of course, for the Phoenix Youth Project, and let us know what music you bumping lately.
Oh, okay. Well, my Instagram is amsetic. And if you want to learn more about Phoenix Youth Project, cause even though like I'm an activist and everything else, like I really do want the youth to really find the leadership in themselves. You can always find stuff about them. Our Instagram is Phoenix, FENIX_YP. So mine is AmSetIt, and the Phoenix Youth Project is Phoenix_YP.
Gotcha. Make sure y'all go ahead, follow on IG. And what's the music you've been bumping
So I'm actually been listening to this Black History Month playlist that I started not too long ago.
Okay. Is it on
Apple Music? Apple Music, and I have, like, you know, just various albums on there. The one album that I'm listening to nonstop is actually the soundtrack to Birth of a Nation. That was that movie, and has various artists on there, and I just really love it. And then I've also been listening to By Any Means Necessary by Georgia Smith, so...
Oh, I love me some Georgia Smith. I love me some Georgia Smith, man. Sheesh. Yeah. Anyway, Aaron, man, why don't you go ahead and drop your IG so we can go ahead and follow you and what you've been bumping lately. All
right. IG is _Machiavelli_. All right. What I've been bumping lately? Division.
That's my guy.
Been it, man, for real.
Yeah, not a lot of people know about Division.
He got me through my deployment.
Hey, albums will do that, dog.
No lie, man.
I dig it, man. Division's he's a great artist. He slept on because not too many people know about him.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure. I've been really bumping that The Feelings and the Muse for a minute. And I was bumping that September 5th. Yeah. That joint knocked.
Yeah, it's too deep, man. That's one of them tracks right there.
Yeah, for sure. Too deep is definitely that track.
Yeah. All right. Hey, we got
TV. So, what about you, fellas? Y'all got any tracks y'all been bumping lately?
I don't know, bro. I've been on my Drake lately, bro.
You can never go wrong with a Drake list. Yeah, that's just all got my Drake list.
Right. I'm gonna say Aaron and Zay, y'all like it's kind of hard for me to admit I'm bumping.
I started going through some of their music. Anders got a song called Rain. St. John, I've been going back to his beginning album because that album, we played it all the way through.
Which, before we go, how y'all feel about The Weeknd's performance?
I enjoyed it as an artist. like, you know, from an artistic standpoint. Like, I like The Weeknd since he was on SoundCloud, and, you know, he had Trilogy before Trilogy. He just had the little mixtapes. And to watch all that stuff that he did, he had like 500 people in that performance. So I enjoyed it.
That's good. I ended up missing it because that sleep study issue. But anyway, so I was still,
you know, I don't care about the NFL, so I didn't watch it.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither. I get invited to parties and I go for
it. Smart man.
Yeah, I'm saying free food. I'm not a man who can turn that down. Lately, I actually picked up a song today. Like, I heard it for the first time by Ty Dolla $ign. It's called Universe. Yo, y'all definitely got to check that out. It is definitely a vibe. Real positive, uplifting type shit. And y'all know that's how we get down, Positivity Spartans.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I'm saying? It's a great track, man. Listen to it and get back at me. But until next time, ladies and gentlemen, positivity, prosperity, peace.